You're cool to come do this because obviously Midland, Odessa, so important to the energy business, and the infrastructure out there's just been a nightmare forever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the infrastructure is wild out here. You see a huge disconnect in Midland, Odessa, especially in Odessa. You know, I've lived in West Odessa forever, and some of the biggest names are out here. You know, Halliburton has a facility out here. It's got, at some points, 800 plus guys, and yet they're the only ones with sewer out here, while 35 to 40,000 people don't have any sewer access. A lot of them don't have water. And of course, with that, that means they don't have broadband, right? And so you start to see all these issues where you only have a handful of places that a lot of these companies want to build and grow, and it's mostly on the interstate. It's been an issue. I mean, I've been here 40 years now.
Yeah, and kind of why is that? Because my sense would be that I get it, boom and bust of oil and we go broke. But when times are good, it seems like there should be money spent there. Now, it may fall into disrepair during the bust cycles, and I understand that. But it just feels like kind of Midland, Odessa just has never spent money on kind of the basics. And that feels different than the other oil towns. You know, you go into Tulsa, you go into Oklahoma City, there's a nice hotel there. During the bust time, it's vacant, but it was at least built during the good time. What's the story behind that?
I mean, you pretty much hit it dead on. You know, I was a co-chair for a pack here to bring this last bond in Odessa. Midland was running one at the same time. Our bond was a little under a half a billion. Theirs was well over half a billion. And, you know, I did the whole show, for example, right? We got a booth. It was donated to us. We're one of those back barns. And we had people like Diamondback or ProPetro, Champion, running guys by to talk to us about it to make sure they were informed. We made sure we knew about both bonds and both cities because the last time we passed one was, you know, well over a decade ago. And that was the first gripe I get is, well, you know, we just passed one. I was like, well, that was 12 years ago, right?
And what was
most districts passed one.
What was the Odessa bond for? I had at least read about the one in Midland and kind of the $1 billion because Case Van Hoff had been very kind of vocal about it, written editorials. What was, but I hadn't heard about the Odessa bond. What was it for?
Yeah, so, you know, that kind of plays into energy, and I will give a shout out to Case, Sam Sledge over at ProPetro, and a couple others donated quite a lot of money to us to help push that bond over here, just like they did in Midland. You know, they see how important this is, but the Odessa bond's a little different. So Midland, they were going to build two brand new high schools, which they dearly need. We do as well, but ours was mostly to fix a lot of outdated, antiquated HVAC, plumbing, electrical, especially, you know, every single room now has how many computers, how many digital devices, all those things. A lot of these buildings were built pre-82. In fact, we have very few facilities in Midland or Odessa that aren't roughly 60 years of age. And most of the recent ones that are nicer were built right around that bust in the 80s. So that's, you know, just a whole lot of old thoughts of, you know, we're going to have this boom, we're going to have this bust. We can't keep investing because of what they saw in the 80s and how long it took to recover versus what we see now in the shale revolution where, I mean, it's not really going to slow down much and we have all these issues with workforce. So the big thing we brought to our bond, it's about a third of it, is a new career and technical education building. And we had a lot of backing on that. There's a group called the Permian Strategic Partnership. That's everybody from Oxy, Diamondback, ProPetro, Targa, just every name that you can think of. They buy into this. It's all about education and developing the area for the future workforce. And they committed to actually donating up to $10 million to if we pass that bond. So that's to help on top of whatever we pass the bond for, which was roughly $80 million. And then we get a little bit extra from them to help expand that because they see the needs of the workforce.
And so has the bond been voted on yet, or is it still to be voted on?
So both Odessa and Midland passed their bonds in November, the bulk of them at least. We had a small portion that was supposed to go to Ratliff Stadium. You know that stadium you see in the movie of Friday Night Lights, Permian Panthers. That stadium is a little more than 50 years old at this point, and it has some foundation issues. And we brought a very small package to the voters, said, hey, we need to spend a little less than $3 million to rip everything out, do a coating, and kind of bulk up all this concrete, because unfortunately we've had some earthquakes in this area and that building wasn't designed for that. And we couldn't get the voters to pass that part, but it was such a small portion. The biggest bulk of the bond passed in Odessa as well in Midland.
And so the Odessa bonds were Odessa school district bonds, or the county bonds, city bonds?
What's the full county? So it's Ector County. Okay. So it's Ector County Independent School District, which is one of the largest school districts in the area by far. So, you know, I think y'all talked a lot with a couple different people from Diamondback on some of the podcasts under Digital Wildcatters about the Midland bond, right? What's interesting about Odessa and Midland is Odessa is the size of their school district right now is what Midland plans to grow into in about a decade. So we're that far ahead of them as far as the amount of students. We have 33,500 students in the district right now across all of Ector County.
Oh, wow. That is pretty big. And so raise the money, you're upgrading basically school buildings. And then tell me more about, is it CTE? Is that what you're calling the training center that you were just talking about?
Yeah, CTE is short for Career Technical Education. One of the cool things we're doing here, it all goes back to energy, right? We've started a whole new curriculum here because we talked with PSP, that Permian Strategic Partnership, much easier to call them PSP. they saw the need in the workforce, right? And they're telling us, I sat in on a really interesting energy talk back in October at University of Texas Permian Basin, where their finance director came out and said, you know, we told you 5-6 years ago, we're going to need roughly 100,000 new employees throughout the entire Permian Basin. That's not only to fill in new jobs, but also replace the retirees, right? Back in October, November, I'm not sure exactly when it was, they came out with completely new numbers. They basically doubled that number. So now they see 190,000 new jobs that are going to be needed in roughly 10 years in the Permian Basin. So that's why the Permian Strategic Partnership comes together and says, hey, you know, we're going to make a donation to this career and technical education building. You've got an energy part to it. We're doing everything from training guys on, you know, how to actually operate a drilling rig, how to read meters. They're going to have a control room that they actually operate in the facility, collect data. Even foreign language is looked completely different in these facilities, right? So instead of doing your normal foreign language, you're going to have options to get data analytics, bring that data in, write software with it, pump it back out instead of learning French or Spanish. So this is a true career technical education. And then you see really cool things like we're not doing your typical language arts, right? Instead, you're coming in and you're having technical writing or learning how to read blueprints and things like that. It's a facility that really feeds the workforce in the area.
Oh, that's cool. And is it grade 9 through 12? I mean, is this in effect replacing high school? Is this after high school?
It is for 9 through 12. And one of the cool things about PSP is, you know, they get to utilize this facility. So kids go to school, what, about 180 days of the year. That's all they go, right? So half the school year, they're not actually in that facility. So PSB has this option to utilize all of this donated equipment, the extra space, even our culinary, right? So we're going to have a bistro that they can rent out at nights and weekends, different centers that they can utilize for training for continued education. And then we also have partnerships with the local community college, which has a huge welding program, so they can utilize the facility as well. So this isn't just for those kids 9 through 12. It'll be open nights, weekends, summer, for all of the industry around. And so what we did is we got a big donation for the land. It's roughly 40 acres from a group called Grow Odessa. So we got to save about $3 million. It's going to go to the facility. But this location is located right on I-20, kind of closer towards Midland. So both Midland and Odessa are going to have the opportunity to use that for all that continuing education. There's not a whole lot of driving going on. And then there's some major names right around the corner. You've got Cud Energy. You got Caterpillar literally across the street. So a lot of synergies that can be happening with this facility.
So this is cool. So when does the facility get built? When do you have your first class of folks coming through?
So CTE is a little different because these kids are already participating. They love to do this. And so we have a little bit of flexibility. Originally, we were going to try to open the facility for the school year of 2026. But due to some planning, some new donations that came in, it gives us a little bit more square footage. Some new programs we're adding to energy, such as mapping, data analytics that ties directly to the energy sector. We made a lot of changes recently, so we pushed it about 7 months. But the goal now is January of 2027, so the middle of that school year. These kids that are in some of the facilities already, and we have 7 different facilities right now that we operate all of our CTE out of. Those will go in, most of them will go into one facility, and they'll move right there around Christmas.
Oh, cool. And so kids can opt into this? I mean, you're in eighth grade and you're going to go to Odessa High School and you can say, no, I want to go into this program. How does that work?
Well, that's the trick, right? So you've got a kid in eighth grade and you're trying to tell them, hey, you know, we've got this energy sector, we've got this welding program, cosmetology, culinary, whatever it may be, right? And no eighth grader is thinking about what they want to be when they're coming out of high school. So it's got to be an extremely nice facility. It's got to have programs with hands-on that they've never seen before. And that's how you kind of hook, line, and sinker, right? You go out there, say, at eighth grade, we're going to walk you through this facility. We're going to show you how cool all these programs are. We're going to show you the different things you get to do. And then that's how you kind of get them in there. Whereas, you know, you go to Odessa High, you go to Permian. I mean, you're by law, you have to go to school, right? So those facilities are a little bit different and it's not really a choice. We have to make sure we educate the community that this is a choice. And there are limits. So in the past, we have one of the largest welding programs in all of Texas. There's 140 seats, 140 stalls that they utilize, and 400 students are in our welding program here. Some transfer in and out throughout the day. Some are there all day long, but we're by far one of the biggest. So they went to regionals recently and they just mopped the floor with every other district. I got first and second, everything except for art and welding. And we have a great program here because of that. And we've had this huge, huge line for a decade where the juniors and seniors, they get to opt in as long as they have good grades for that welding program. Those freshmen and sophomore, they're usually just passed along because we didn't have enough seats for them. But, you know, what if you want to explore that? What if you want to take welding certificate, but then you also want to go into another program? You weren't really allowed that with the other facilities. So this new facility has more seats, more capability, and we're just serving more kids.
That's really cool. So one thing that hit me is whenever you want us, Colin and I would love to come out there and shoot content, you know, shoot the kids working on stuff, showing what they're learning and the like, because what we have found is that for all the, you know, kind of our industry psychosis, for lack of a better word, that everybody hates us, people actually think what we do is fascinating. And if we just document it, I mean, Colin did a TikTok video on how a drill bit works and it got 1.2 million views in 2 weeks. And all the comments are like, dude, this is so dope. This is so cool. So we'd love to come out and just document that stuff, because it sounds like what you guys are doing in Odessa is what I've wanted HISD to do for the last 20 years. I mean, HISD has been a shit show of a school district. And I've always said, you know, we've got just these great kids in Houston. We've got some economically challenged areas. That's a perfect spot to go get oil field people. You know, let's go train them. You walk in and tell a kid, hey, you want to make $100,000 and you get to drive a big, huge truck? And they're like, hell yeah, I'm in. So First, love to come out and see it and shoot stuff. And then so you're gonna have the new facility up kind of January of 2027. What do you think you'll see in terms of metrics? Like, how many kids do you think run through the program? What does kind of the future look like with this?
That's where it gets a bit tricky, right? So we started planning this about 3 years ago. And we had this idea of how many square footage we were going to have. When you bring a bond, you have a dollar amount set for each program. So if you say you're going to build a middle school, which we did have on our bond, that was X amount, which was $120 million. Our CTE was $80 million. We can't really move those funds around. But when we started the planning, a lot's changed since then, right? So inflation has just kind of taken over everything. You brought up Houston. You know, there's A-Leaf in Houston, which is, I think it's 215,000 square feet. Beautiful building, right? They built it for less than $30 million. We've got $80 million going to this, which includes equipment too. So $60 million-ish is going towards the building itself. We're going to build about 100,000 square feet less, but that's for almost double the amount. That's how much inflation has taken over since we started this planning. So some of those donations that come in from PSP, that's going to help a bit. We're hoping for some more. We've had some really good talks with some very interesting people. And one of the tricky things with PSP is no one really knows who that is. Even though it's some of the biggest names in the industry, they don't really tell the best story. They're not really worried about that either, about getting each individual name out there. But some of the individual companies, whether that's Oxy or Diamondback or, you know, and they also participate in our committees as well. So we do have Coterra and Diamondback do have representation within the committee, because we want people from the industry come in and say, well, this isn't only what we see we need today, but what we need 5 years, 10 years down the road. How do we introduce this to the kids at that eighth grade level to be interested in it? How do we tell that story? How do we make them understand how important oil and gas is or other energy factors? We've looked at things like carbon capture, PVs, wind, but you know, we also have these partnerships with Odessa College, which kind of, they kind of pick up all the renewable stuff for us right now. And we never really had much participation or at least interest from the students, even though they talk about it a lot. They never seem to want to go into those career fields at the high school level.
Oh, that's interesting. That is one of the things. We get a lot of phone calls around here at Digital Wildcatters of, hey, I'm a carbon capture company. Hey, I'm a wind, I'm a solar company. You know, I need a 15-year engineer to do this. And I always tell young people, I'm like, hey, the skills are very transferable. I mean, you can go be a landman and buy minerals out in Ector County all you want and negotiate land surface agreements. And oh, by the way, you can do the same thing for a wind farm if you want. I mean, it goes from those type skills to welders are always going to be in demand, the technical type aspects. Because I always tell everybody, oil and gas is the highest skill level trained workforce on the planet. It's really, really cool, the stuff we do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the technology that comes out of this area, it's used all over the world. You start to tell that story and kind of show it to people, all the things you can get into. Some of the stuff that we removed from the CTE over the years because everybody told you, hey, go learn how to code. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm a software engineer myself, so I don't hate on that at all. But, you know, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, all of these fields, we can't fill in the area. And all of those are transferable into oil and gas, especially electrical. You know, I mean, look at the frac fleets. Everything's going electric now. Look at all the modular stuff that we're doing with data centers and AI. You know, I sit on a board right now for a broadband initiative, a nonprofit we're doing right now. It's in its early stages. We've had all these really good conversations with companies looking to move into the area because it's really easy to move around data. It's really hard to move around electricity. But we have all the energy in the world here. And I mean, you see Waha Hub, it goes negative every time you turn around. And there's so many opportunities, and you know, we're not just doing that in Ector County. We're looking to push that all the way out to Reeves County, Pecos County, Midland County, Andrews, and just have all these opportunities of infrastructure. If we're building a workforce for the future is going to involve AI, deep learning, data centers, and we have to understand that, and we have to move with that. Otherwise, we end up in another bust, right? We don't have those opportunities. We don't see it and move forward right now. It's just, it's another nightmare right down the road.
Yeah, no, it's we, Colin and I have talked about this probably for 3 years now, but you know, our view of the world when it comes to Bitcoin mining, because ultimately Bitcoin mining is about the cheapest, most reliable power you can get. And that's always going to move in places in the world, but you also want security, et cetera. We've always said that the Bitcoin mining map of the United States should like look like the shale revolution. Because it's like, where do I have cheap natural gas? Where do I have the infrastructure to do that? And if you're an 18-year-old kid, I would say, go figure out Bitcoin mining, because it's computers, it's high tech, it's electrical, it's power, it's cooling, a lot of cool high tech stuff there. And go walk into any oil and gas company and say, hey, all that gas you're flaring, hey, that negative gas that you're having to pay to put on a pipe somewhere, give it to me and I'll Bitcoin mine. That's as high tech as you get. And kids, young kids just love that stuff. And there's just so much opportunity there that I really could say, if I was the mayor of Monahan, I would host every data center, every Bitcoin miner on the planet, take them to the Bennigans. But, you know, I would say this is where you want to be, because we've got, you know, we've got some reliability issues with our grid out there. It's still tough on that, but we got a lot of cheap natural gas. We can generate a lot of electricity, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, you see it, we're doing everything right in the energy side, right? We're going out there and we're just building tons of production. We're finding ways to do it cheaper, more reliable, but then we don't look at all these other technologies. I mean, why are we not looking at data centers with AI? Why are we not looking at Bitcoin mining if we've got the power there? If it's going to be somewhere else, we might as well utilize it here and capture all of that. Then you look at carbon capture, right? I mean, that stuff is wild, how much money they're spending on it. You know, Oxy and 1.5, what they're doing in Ector County, it's just unbelievable, the plant they're building out there. Now, you know, our fans really... out in the middle of nowhere, the best option for capturing carbon. You know, how are they going to utilize it? Is it going to be mostly sequestered into the ground, or is it used for enhanced oil recovery? We'll see how that kind of plays out. But you know, everybody sees all these opportunities within this area in the Permian Basin, but not everybody is utilizing it at full scale. You know, we even have a natural gas to sustainable jet fuel plant that we're looking at having built here as well. And, you know, that's another option for natural gas to get out of pipe and turn into something else. And that's been in the talks for almost 5 years now. And yet we still haven't had someone step forward and say, well, let's just get this stuff done. It's the same thing with Bitcoin mining. Really easy. It's modular. Just talk with the right people, host it, and you'll have it done within weeks, months.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And if I'll volunteer myself as being a guest lecturer, the one thing I've noticed in my career, and I've been in the energy business, call it 30 years, is 30 years ago, we didn't have as much science and engineering-driven type things that we have now. I mean, you know, it's amazing, drilling a horizontal well, modern frack, it's incredible what we could do, but what we did have way back 30 years ago is we had swashbuckling wildcatters that would say, you know what, I'm gonna build the world's biggest data center here because I've got cheap natural gas. You know, think Clayton Williams, think those type visionary folks. And it does feel like we're kind of lacking that, because if you look at the world today, you have technology companies that are sitting there going, oh my gosh, we need a lot of power to be able to run all this stuff. So they're definitely heading our way. And I feel like we, the energy companies, should be heading their way equally as fast. And it doesn't feel like we're doing that when historically, we've been the most entrepreneurial industry on the planet. I mean, right? You spend every dollar you have drilling a well, then you turn it on and go, all right, what do we got, boys? So.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. You know, it's kind of that old guard thing. You're constantly trying to tell the story, and you have certain people in the industry that just cannot see past it. They don't really understand how everything works, or they don't listen long enough to really truly understand it. But they'll understand industry. They'll understand things like you talked about. I mean, horizontal drilling is modern marvel. It's unbelievable some of the things we do with the fracking out here. And, you know, the production, you see it in the numbers. We're now number one in the world producing oil. And it's for good reason. We have entrepreneurs in the area, a lot of private guys out there that are really pushing the envelope. But why don't we see it in technology? Why are they not utilizing all of this, what's considered, you know, cheap natural gas? And I mean, look at it, right? We're the only country really in the world that wasn't under huge recession within the past few years because we have cheap energy. You know, we grew jobs, we especially Texas. And you know, this is a really interesting number, right? So Texas, let's look at the whole country, right? So the whole country, for every dollar invested in education, you get about a return on your economic impact of about 57 bucks, right? So for every dollar, $57. Really good number. Texas is double that. So Texas, for some reason, when they invest in education, whether that's at the college level or, you know, your high school and middle school level, they see the economic impact for all of the area nearly $108 for every dollar spent. So, you know, the same thing with education when you go into Bitcoin, right? Or you go into the data centers. Why don't you educate these people, make them understand and see the economic impact and how you get the true returns? I mean, that's what we're all about, right? Is getting returns on investment.
Because what I want the kids to see is, you know, your story that you just said, hey, we doubled oil production after being in decline for 30 some odd years. I think we peaked in, what, 1972, and we were in decline until, call it 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. And we doubled U.S. production in such a short period by adopting technology. And it was literally five guys in a rusty pickup type stuff that did it. It was not Exxon. It was not Chevron. It was a bunch of private equity and small management teams getting after it. And now when we look at the need for power going forward, I mean, when you look at power, you go 1950 to 2000, power usage was up almost 15x, right? We just developed a bunch of cool things that needed power: computers, air conditioning, refrigerators, you know. And so 2000 to about today, very slightly up the use of electricity. And it's because all the machines got really efficient. I mean, we're using 10x the power for data centers today versus we were 10 years ago. Or I'm sorry, we have 10 times the computing power in data centers from 10 years ago, but we're only using 10% more electricity to power that. And it's because the machines have gotten so much more efficient. But I don't know how much we can be doing that. And so when we look out, I think Elon Musk says we're going to need 3x the power by 2045. Goldman Sachs is at like 2.5. I think McKinsey's at 2x. Whatever it is, it's a lot more. And you made the point earlier, electrons are really hard. They have to be synchronized in a grid, moving pieces. So I don't know that the existing utility infrastructure is going to be able to lead that change. And so there's this massive opportunity for entrepreneurial oil and gas companies to figure out how to move into that realm. And I'd love for 18-year-old kids to hear that story, because those are going to be the ones that do it, not the guys sitting around today that are running our oil and gas companies, because I don't think we have those visionaries like we used to.
Oh yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I've seen those numbers as well. You know, 2x to 4x on power. Your electricity needs, whether if we hit that net zero, which, you know, we'll see how that goes, but that's 4x. And that's with the data centers and everything. So how do you move that electricity around? Why don't we, utilize electricity or the power that we have here, the energy within the Permian Basin, and start having those modular opportunities. And, you know, telling those kids these stories. So even though I'm not part of the school district, you know, I'm just a parent, community member, and I sit on a lot of these committees for the school district, which that's what they need. They need people from the outside instead of this echo chamber. But I've met a lot of really great directors, especially on the CTE side. And so they invite me to do different things. In fact, yesterday I did one for some digital audio guys over at one of their facilities where we flew drones for the kids. And we explained the opportunities in the energy sector and, you know, monitoring methane and mapping and LIDAR, and just went through every single piece. And these are 16-year-old kids that, you know, are getting to fly a commercial drone for the very first time. We're doing it, you know, right around the eclipse. So there's a little extra coolness around it. And we also just found out that they okayed to add a drone program to Ector County's for Odessa's school district that will have these kids with a full program to become a commercial drone pilot at 16 years old. So when they walk out of high school, they have that certificate and they're able to utilize that as part of their resume. Go out there and, you know, start monitoring methane or, you know, whoever. There's just so many opportunities with that.
That's so cool to hear. The coolest piece of art I have in my house is we had back when I was at Kane, we had invested in a company called Silver Hill that we ultimately sold to RSP for $2.5 billion, and it was right there, Loving Winkler County, in the Delaware. And so we hired a drone to go fly over and take pictures, and then we lasered those pictures onto tin with very bright, vibrant colors in it, and it's pretty cool stuff. And I mean, just shooting that drone footage was one of the coolest things ever, you know, in terms of watching it and everything. So I mean, I couldn't imagine being 16 and being told, hey, you can make money doing this. I'd be like, wow, I'd be in. So this is really cool. I love the stuff you're doing. I'd love to figure out a way, you know, we're happy to come out and shoot all this footage and stuff, but I'd love to figure out how we export this, because quite frankly, every school system in Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Texas, and let's throw Louisiana in there, and maybe Montana and North Dakota. I don't know that Colorado would take it, but Colorado should do it too. But anyway, we should be doing this in all high schools, because these are skills that people are going to be able to use in all other industries. And it just, selfishly for our business, this is how we get a lot less griping about made up environmental claims, and more kind of just have a reasonable discussion on the trade-offs of energy and what do we need to do to get to net zero, et cetera. So I think you're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the messaging that we have with the kids when we're looking at them at the eighth grade is, you know, how important is the Permian Basin to not just carbon capture or renewables and things like that, but how clean the energy is here. You know, just the carbon footprint of the oil coming out of the ground or the regulations that we have in the U.S. There's just it's so important to tell them that message. So you look at, I saw a study recently of kids that are 16 to 22 and how they feel about the industry and if they would work in the industry, right? And I think it was 1,000 kids that they interviewed, and less than 6% said they would even consider the energy industry as a whole, including renewables, out of that 1,000 kids. So would they actually work in it? It was well less than 6% of that 1,000 kids. It's just unreal how they don't even consider the industry. So you got to tell that story and say, well, there's a whole lot more going on here, and we're going to need these hydrocarbons. Like, there's no way around that for decades to come. So would you rather produce it in the Permian, in the U.S., or do you want to go overseas where it's a lot dirtier and there's a whole lot more issues? And we've told that story very well. And kids, they kind of perk up and they go, well, I didn't know that. My dad works in the oil field. I had no idea that that was a thing. And I'm like, well, you know, you do now. So go home and tell dad.
My my favorite saying along those lines, particularly when I talk to 16-year-old kids, is, all right, guys, I'm just going to tell you, when it comes to the atmosphere, it's like a swimming pool. There's no peeing and non-peeing section of the swimming pool. You pee in it anywhere, you're stuck with it. So, yeah, no, you're right. We need to tell that story more, and you know, need to do it in a positive way, and in no way a defensive measure, because we don't have things to be defensive or apologize about. We've done great things. I mean, you start talking about inventions that have led to better humanity. You start talking the wheel, fire, hydrocarbons are top five, for sure top 10. And yeah, we got some issues to work through, but I'll tell you this, we're going to be the solution, not more of the problem when it comes to fixing things.
Yeah, I mean, you're just honest with the kids too, right? So you go in there and you say, yeah, we do have certain issues. You know, methane is a great example, right? You start leaking methane everywhere and you're not monitoring things, but you're honest with the kids. You say, you know, these are the parts of the industry we need to fix. These are the things that we're doing right, wrong, and you look for solutions. The only way you're going to solve that is by actually looking at the industry as a whole and trying to figure out how to bring those solutions to life. And we get really great conversations with a 16-year-old kid that's like, well, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? And I'm like, well, you know, the technology's not there, or, you know, but they're asking the questions. And that, I think that's one of the most important parts, because once they start asking those questions, well, now you know they're truly interested in the industry. And you have a kid there that's going to possibly be, you know, the next one to come through this area and revolutionize something. You never know. So, but capturing them at that young age, they're, you know, possibly, you know, going to go into data centers or AI or deep learning or, you know, whatever the buzzword is at that time, because they never considered oil and gas because nobody ever talked to them about it.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Kevin Searcy, you've been very cool to come on. If people want to reach out, how do they find you? Are there websites with the committees you work with? Is there... where can people get more information about all the stuff we've been talking about today?
So I am on Twitter. Bronco24 is my handle. I also write on Substack, energycrisis.substack.com, which is fitting for kind of where I feel like we are in this industry right now. And, you know, the ECISD does have their own bond page. You know, we're working through things when they get updates, but I also put a lot of those updates on my Substack as well and Twitter.
Very, very cool of you. Appreciate you coming on.